You are listening to the Chef John podcast. I'm Andrew Scrivani.
And I'm Chef John, the butter in this roux.
Okay, welcome back, John. How are you?
Good, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy to be back here on the Chef John podcast with you. I've been trolling social media and looking at all of our fun responses and posts that we've been making on Instagram and Twitter at Chef John Pod. Those are our handles we really would love for you to interact with you on.
And of course, don't forget, people can check out the website, thechefjohnpodcast.com.
Oh, that's always fun too. Where you can find all the places where you can listen to our show. You don't watch a podcast, do you, John?
You can. It is not that entertaining.
All right.
But I've done it. You just stare at the thumbnail.
You sort of meditate.
If you stare at it long enough, it starts to move. It's really weird. Or that could have just been me. No, I agree. Great comments. Great. A few questions, of course. The only problem is some of the comments are actually, funnier than the stuff we say on the show. Anyway, thank you to everyone who has chimed in. And of course, for all the lovely 5-star ratings. And hey, if you're going to leave a rating, you might as well leave a comment. So hit us up there. What do the kids say these days? Check out our social media. No, it's not that.
That's not what they say.
They say something.
They say something. We just don't know what it is because we have absolutely no idea what is going on.
Nor should we, because if we're saying it, they don't say it anymore.
It's just not cool. Yeah. Once we've said it, it's not cool anymore. So I'm enjoying the idea that we have our own language here at the Chef John podcast.
And our language is off the chain.
So I've been thinking, John, as I'm wont to do at the beginning of our show, I've been thinking a lot about that time when you're in a restaurant and food that you did not order comes to your table and you just don't tell them that it isn't yours, or the cocktail that arrives that the server who's not yours is dropping at your table and you're just not informing them.
Sure.
Yeah, I enjoy that moment. I don't know about you, but I've always enjoyed that moment.
Well, officially what that, no matter what it is, what that dish is called when that happens.
What's that?
Nachos.
Woo! Okay.
That joke never gets old.
No, it never does.
I think I got that. I heard that the first time on The Simpsons, if I'm not mistaken.
Nacho fries.
Nacho cheese. Leave it alone. That's fine. Nachos.
Today, we're talking about victimless hospitality crimes.
Yes. And really, there's no such thing. But this is more to, ease my conscience. There probably was a victim, and we will get into this. I think the most classic example of this, for me, I'm sure everyone, well, maybe not everyone, but if you're a foodie, you've probably heard of the French Laundry in Napa Valley. Thomas Keller, very celebrated, very decorated celebrity chef.
Rings a bell.
Rings a bell. Who, by the way, if I may segue slightly, gave one of my favorite all-time answers to a panel question from an audience member, maybe ever, at the Aspen Food and Wine. This woman raised her hand. He was doing some demo or panel discussion with some other chefs, and she asked him, "How does he decide when to season with just salt or salt and pepper? When does he put the pepper on? She heard if you put the pepper on and then you cook the food, it can singe or burn. Does he put the pepper on after?" And so he goes into this at least 10-12 minute diatribe about seasoning, that there's really only salt and acid, and he's getting very scientific and inside baseball, and he's just going on and on, and she's standing the whole time, by the way, which was a little I'm like two rows behind her, and that's what people did. They stood till their question was asked and sat down. I don't think she expected it to be this long of an answer. Anyway, he finishes this very philosophical seasoning versus spicing versus, and then he's like, "Oh, I hope that was, I hope that did it for you." And she's like, "Well, actually, I asked you about when do you like to put on the black pepper?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't use black pepper."
Nice.
And then he went to the next question. And I'm like, that's pretty good. He just answered a different question, the question he wanted to answer.
When did he get into umami? And like, did people just start glazing over?
No, he did not. He did not drop the umami card.
All right.
the mysterious fifth flavor.
The fifth flavor.
So anyway, that's my Thomas Keller memory from Aspen, as I drop names and places. So anyway, back to the story of this victimless restaurant crime. I got to go to French Laundry one time for free, which is really, if you can do it, that's the best way to go.
That's the crime. Okay, show over.
Yeah, next story. I highly suggest it if you can go there for free. But what happened was a former student of Michelle and I's from the Culinary Academy offered to take us and a handful of what she described as her favorite instructors from her time at the school as a thank you, take us to French Laundry, which, you know, you do not refuse an offer like that. So she said, we're going to meet at the Academy. There's going to be a ride. Just come hungry. Don't bring anything. So we get there. Nice limo, just totally, totally set up with champagne and some, I think there was some cheese, like very professionally done. So we get to French Laundry and I think it was a table of 10, 8 or 10. I don't quite remember, but I'm seated next to her. I'm going to guess 12, 13 year old son.
Okay.
And didn't think much of it until the first course came. And he appeared to be a very picky eater. And I believe the first course, if I'm not mistaken, was a cauliflower, like flan type thing with a poached oyster on top. And then they made a jelly from the oyster liqueur and they had that set over the top. And he was not digging that at all, texturally, appearance wise. And of course, all the adults are like, oh my God, this is the best thing we've ever eaten. So he, I see him kind of looking at it and poking at it. And his mom's like, you know, just take a small bite. If you don't like it, no problem. Your friend Chef John will take care of it for you, you know, jokingly. And I'm like, oh, no problem. So he pretends to take a bite, hates it. So I'm like, you know what? Let me put you out of your misery. I go ahead and whoop, grab it. And I put down a second oyster cauliflower flan, whatever they were calling it. And as I'm, you know, finishing that up, I'm thinking, this is a good seat.
Yeah.
This kid is going to hate everything. And I'm going to make out like a bandit here. And that's exactly what happened. And what made it, and I'm still going with victimless. I don't think we harmed this young man in any way.
Yeah, he can still talk about his experience of eating at the French Laundry.
And watching the chef next to him eat twice as much as he should have.
Absolutely.
So about halfway through the meal, I started to help him along because he was on the fence with some of this stuff. Like, oh, this looks like fried chicken. I'm like, no, actually, that's a thymus gland. That's sweetbreads. It's kind of like where the, you know, the blood. So I'm trying to make things sound as gross as possible. He's like, oh, really? I was like, no, nothing like fried chicken. Believe me, if it was like fried chicken, I would tell you to eat yourself. Now, what's really nice about the French Laundry, and they probably don't want this too publicly explained, but if you do bring a younger person who does not like anything, they will, because they're bored, I guess, in the kitchen, they'll whip up a little something, a little chicken finger, a little, you know, nugget of mac and cheese, very French Laundry-ish.
Yeah, how very Northern California of them.
But still approachable. And so that's what they were, you know, they'd let him try it. He would hate it. He would give it to me. And then they'd bring him up, you know, bring him out a little something.
Wow.
So that was a very memorable meal.
Did you eat that food too when they brought that out?
Yes, he liked that stuff, although I did get a little bit.
All right, good. As long as you got a little bit.
And it's weird because of you think that would be sort of the most memorable part of that meal. But actually, there was a person at the table who was taking just a ridiculous number of smoke breaks, which is a nightmare for a fixed price, fixed set menu kind of choreographed meal, because there's a certain amount of time between courses and you got to fire things to time them. So this dude would just disappear for, you know, like as long as it takes to smoke a cigarette, just randomly between courses. So Thomas Keller or his cooks presented him with a special course at the end of the meal. It was like a tobacco-based snack. It was like a tobacco foam on something, like really creative. It was actually, he said, was good. We didn't get to taste it. I assume it was edible.
Yeah, they didn't give that one to the kid, right?
The kid did not do the the cigarette butt foam. But anyway, that was kind of interesting. They were both appeasing the customer and completely just owning him without him knowing it at the same time. So I thought that was kind of a cool gesture. But yes, very, very memorable meal. Getting free food on top of free food from this very, very picky 12 to 13 year old diner who maybe by now is enjoying oyster jelly and cauliflower flan and sweetbreads, but not that day.
So what do you think? You think at the French Laundry, what do you think is a typical, like, four people at the table, how much you think the bill is?
Oh, easily 1,200.
Okay.
And that's before you even get into the wine pairings.
Right. So then we're talking $300 a person, right? And you ate for two, so that's $600. So we're actually, we're edging into like grand larceny.
I can get serious time for that.
No, I mean, so you could have definitely been in San Quentin for what you did at.
And it really never stopped because it's one of those, and you've eaten at these restaurants, you think you're done.
Yeah.
And then the dessert, the first of three dessert courses come, and then you think you're done. Did we mention the petit fours? And then you think you're done, but then the homemade jelly candies come with the bill. And then you think you're finally out of there and you can go back to your house and just pass out. But no, they have signed cookbooks that Thomas Keller has signed that she bought, each one of us one. So now we have to, and then there's the little tour of the kitchen on the way out. And, you know, 14 hours later, we finally arrived back in, you know, San Francisco.
So that student who took you there basically has been working ever since to pay for that meal.
No, I think, and I just wish I could remember her name. This is horrible that I don't. And I don't have Michelle to remind me of. Yes, I think we have an answer.
Oh.
Marla.
All right.
If Marla's listening, thank you, Michelle.
The Northern California producer to the rescue again.
And she was actually technically Michelle's student.
Okay.
So Michelle gets full credit for my double dipping. Anyway, that was really nice of her. And so if she's listening, thank you for the lovely memories and all the food. Way too much food.
I want to hear from that kid. Like, now that he's grown up, I want to hear about how he got kind of ripped off at the French Laundry.
Probably a chef. Yeah, I think he was pretty happy with the chicken finger and the mac and cheese fritters or whatever they called them. I don't think he lost too much sleep not getting to eat those sweetbreads. And
well, I mean, if he's thinking about bringing charges, I got two things to say to him. Number one, statute of limitations, and two, see legal.
Yes, when we have a legal department, we will forward this to them.
We ventured into the depths of domestic crime in Northern California at the French Laundry, but I have a sense that you might have engaged in a little bit of international crime as well.
You know, I knew I was going to regret telling you that story.
Yeah.
So many years ago, because it's not a proud moment.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, you know, online know me as Mr. Squeaky Clean.
Mm-hmm.
Can't find anything. There's no negative reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that's had those has been neutralized.
Right.
As you like to say in the business.
Yes, very much so.
But there was one very dark episode that happened in Rome that I actually stole beer.
Oh, no.
Consciously, knowingly, happily at the time. I feel bad now.
Call the Carabinieri.
But it's not really like it sounds. First of all, let me set the stage. I am in my early 20s. I am beyond dead broke. And my aunt, who lives in New York, offered to take me to Italy. And she used to do this with her nieces and nephews. She would each summer would take someone and they would be her, you know, accompaniment and slash bodyguard.
Nice.
You know, help with the luggage, you know, the whole shebang. And so this year was my turn and she was going to Italy. So I was very excited. And I explained, zero money, no money, have nothing to spend. Don't worry, taken care of, food, hotel, you just come have a good time. Sounds great.
Wow.
And it was very, very cool.
That's fantastic.
Rome, Florence, Venice, Capri, Naples for about 10 minutes, waiting for the boat to Capri.
I mean, the food must have been outrageous.
The food was terrible.
No.
The The food was terrible because I am like every other American that's gone to Italy, thinking Italian food is what we grew up eating in Italian American restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and it is not.
No.
It is not even close.
Not even close.
It's like, why are the vegetables on separate plates and why don't they come with the food? And I'm so confused by everything. So I won't say the food wasn't good. That's not fair. The food, I'm sure, was extraordinary. It is just very, very confusing.
Your expectations, you had very different expectations.
Especially some, you know, hayseed up from Western New York. You know, I just barely gotten to San Francisco and had my eyes open that there's a rest of the world out there. So the food is, and you hear this, it's a very common referring. People get back and they're like, how's the food? It's like, they don't know how to make a spaghetti meatball over there. So overhyped. And, you know, you think you can find a good Hawaiian pizza? Think again.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah.
Don't get us started. So anyway, we go over there and she is, what's the euphemism for? Like a type A, she's a planner. She's an organizer, a planner. We had a very strict itinerary, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, walks, tours. And then about 7, 8 at night, she would be all tuckered out and we would turn in. Now I can't complain. I got 3 square meals and a few snacks, but as a young man in Rome with no money, a little frustrating, 22 years old, stuck in the hotel room, a couple of nights I would just walk around, you know, not panhandling, but you know, if someone says, hey, you look like you use a cannoli. So that got to be kind of old and even worse at a certain point because you're watching people just chugging wine and drinking frosty beers and snacking and you're going back to your hotel room. And if you're lucky, there's a, you know, package of M&Ms from the vending machine. So this one night I just was really, really wanting a beer.
You had reached your limit.
As luck would have it, my window faced like this little courtyard that had a couple outdoor cafes or whatever those people call them in Rome. Are they cafes? They're still cafes, right?
Still cafes.
So I'm watching people just doing what I want to be doing so badly. And I have no access to any of this. And then across the room, I hear the hum of the minibar, the little mini fridge, which I don't even think I'd opened to that point. So I take a peek and I'm thinking, I wonder how much these beers are. And I'm kind of gauging how upset would she be if I just started ordering beers on the room service. But you know, even I, at that young age, know the beer in a hotel is going to be crazy expensive. And then from the mini bar is going to be probably twice that. And so I thought better of it, but then I got an idea because the beer was in green bottles and brown bottles.
Okay.
And it was in the back row of the mini fridge.
You can see where this is going.
I'm thinking, are they even going to miss one? If I drink one, maybe they won't even charge her and I will get away with this. But then I'm thinking, no, this person, what's the joke? That was your only job. So I'm thinking this person's only job is to open the mini fridge, yep, see if anything's missing, and then charge you. So my plan evolved into, let's take the first 2 rows of drinks out, which were like juices, mineral waters, et cetera. Go back to the money row, grab one of those beers. And I thought if I carefully, with like a butter knife or something, pried off the lid without bending it, I could drink that beer in that beautifully colored bottle. I could refill it with water, tap that cap back on, put it back in the back row, put the other 2 rows of drinks in front of it, and probably, I'm guessing that valet, when he comes in to do the count or check the room, he's not pulling 2 rows of drinks out to see if all the beer in the back looks like it hasn't been tampered with.
Nope.
There's no way I'm going to get caught. So there was the ethical dilemma. I know I can totally get away with this and no one will ever know. This is what I'm rationalizing in my brain at the time. So I did it. I was so careful. I was like in a spy movie where you're trying, like, you can't, be careful of the detonator cap. If you take it off, it's going to blow. You know, you think you've wanted a beer before, but like I was in a state where I wanted it so bad. And now I'm sweating bullets from like anxiety. And so I have to have this beer. It's like I've gone over to the dark side.
You were pushed to a life of crime.
Yes, we're like Gollum level, needing to possess this beer. So I ease the cap off this precious, precious and I just savored that beer like no other beer. And I'm sure it was it probably was Peroni, if I have to guess.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, does that win a lot of beer contests? Is that considered like a super great beer? Or is that like the Budweiser of Italy?
Somewhere in the middle. I don't necessarily think it's an award winner, but I don't think it's the Budweiser either.
Is it the Heineken of Italy, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Well, whatever it was one of the more enjoyable beers I've ever had. I finished it, carefully filled it back up, looked at the levels of the other bottles, got it perfect. Tap that cap on. I got the towel from the bathroom or the washcloth and I'm tapping it. Cause if you break the bottle at this point, the jig is up.
Yeah, that's it.
And I know, rationally, there's no way I'm getting caught, but for the next 2 days before we checked out, I'm like waiting for like, hello, did you steal a beer? So anyway, that didn't happen. And I got away with it. And I think this could be the first public admission. I don't know. Speaking of statute of limitations, which at that age I called statue of limitations.
Statue of limitations, which is in the Roman statue gardens and the Colosseum.
Yes. So anyway, I at one point that basically counts as my one brush with crime, knowingly and willingly drinking a beer that was not mine.
You do understand the concept of the butterfly effect, though, right?
I do.
I'm going to give you the aftermath of your victimless crime.
By the way, you're the one calling it a victimless crime. There could be just a string of bodies.
Okay, so here's what happened in the aftermath of your adventure with the beer in Italy.
Okay.
They invented the pressure sensor, which they put into every minibar everywhere in the world now because they don't trust that guy that lost his job because you stole the beer. Then they put the pressure sensors in, eliminating that job at every hotel around the world. And now, because of Chef John, there's rampant unemployment in the hospitality industry.
Yeah, that's terrible. I can only hope they went to school for computer programming instead. But really, if we want to think about it that way. I don't know. I just what kind of amused me years afterward was thinking of the innocent tourists there. I don't know why I always picture a German tourist, because maybe they would be.
Because Italy is filled with German tourists. Yes.
Maybe they would have the least sense of humor about it. I don't know. Maybe they're cut ups.
Well, so very, very serious about their beer.
I'm going. Yes. That's what I'm assuming. Very serious. So I'm picturing a very tired German after a long day of sitting on a bumpy bus, looking at ruins and then looking at ruins that look exactly like the last ruins. And they come back to the hotel room and all the guy wants is just a cold beer. And he's like, not thrilled he's drinking this Italian beer, but he's going to do it. And he pops it off the cap and he probably jokes with his wife, man, this stuff's like water here, or however you say that in German. And probably a few, Scheisens in the Hosens or whatever however they make it more colorful. And then he starts pounding this ice cold water and hopefully in the movie, it's a spit take.
Yep.
All over the desk or wherever you're sitting. And then it's literally tastes like water. So anyway, that's what I think amused me thinking of that memory, which distracted me from the crime part, which makes me feel bad still to this day.
Well, I mean, either that or it was another American tourist who tried the same trick and then got really fooled.
Yes. Or busted. I always thought, you know what? You could probably figure out the name of the hotel and send them $7 or whatever it is. But it didn't bother me that much. So I never did.
And you were in Rome. So did you go to the Vatican and confess?
No, I did go through the Sistine Chapel. Apparently we're not allowed to take pictures there because it ruins the art. Still have no idea scientifically how that works. And I will admit to briefly thinking of my beer related escapades in the hotel room and thinking, if I say something here, is it like, does it count more than if I am, if I regret it, like in, you know, San Francisco? So I don't remember, I don't think I did an official confession or any purging of the conscience. But for what it's worth, I was Pope adjacent for a couple hours. And from what I hear, he has a certain radiance. I'm assuming I was absolved. We'll find out.
Yeah. So there's one last crime that I wanted to talk about, and I know it's one that drives you crazy, and it's the one where the chef is the victim of the substitution.
Oh, no. You mean when they print it on the menu, please, no substitutions allowed, and the person reads that and then asks anyway?
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yes.
I don't know why that would drive a chef crazy, but yes, absolutely.
I'm a bit of a picky diner these days because of the fact that I don't eat wheat, but I don't like to tell restaurants that I'm gluten-free, because then all of a sudden I have a health and safety inspector standing at the table side telling me about every single item on the menu that I cannot eat because it has an ounce of soy sauce in it. So I ask a lot of questions, and quite often I'm asking for substitutions, which usually gets me the side eye. So, I mean, as a chef, how do you feel about this?
Well, that's a tough one. That used to drive me crazy. And I've worked in places that had clearly printed on the menu, no substitutions, especially when it was like a fixed price menu.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really, in the kitchen, it's just a nightmare to accommodate for that.
But isn't the customer always right?
The customer is almost never right. In reality, see, the customer is very, very seldom right. I can count on one hand the time the customer was right. But that does not mean we don't lie to their face and pretend they're right. That's where people get confused. So really the saying should be, the customer should always think they're right, even when they're not, which is almost literally all the time. So what happens is people either miss it or they ignore it. And so they ask the server, oh, the so-and-so with the thing, can I get that? I see you have something on the other menu, the grilled asparagus. I would love that instead. I'm just not a big fan of the whatever it is, squash. And, you know, maybe you had a certain amount of reservations for the thing, the other item. So these are, you know, tricky decisions, because once the person asks, you're kind of screwed either way. Either you're bending the rules and maybe someone else later in the service doesn't get the thing they were supposed to get, or even more importantly, people in the dining room are like, huh, they got the fixed. Why? How'd she get that? That looks like a chicken breast. That does not look like braised chicken thighs. That's weird. So there's all kinds of problems caused. But on the other hand, the customer's always right, as we all know. So you don't want to be just totally blow them off. So, and this is why I went into the kitchen side of the business, not the server side. Because the chef and the cooks, we're not the ones out at the table explaining.
Right. Who becomes the bad guy in this situation, right?
So the poor server has to explain, well, we'd love to do that, but here's the really weak sounding reasons we can't. But what's annoying to the chefs is we have to deal with the server. So now we have upset clients. The server's annoyed, like, why can't you just give them a chicken breast instead of the chicken thigh? And, you know, in the middle of a busy restaurant service, you know, when you don't want to explain things? During that time.
Well, what about a manager? There should be a manager dealing with these things, right?
There usually is, but most smart managers will have the server deal with it, because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to go up the food chain if you don't have to. that can be tricky. And what happens is people, first you point out, oh, I don't know if you saw this. There's no substitutions. You know, I'm sorry about that. But after they've clearly understood that, and then they still are asking and insisting, that's where it gets a little tricky, and it's just an annoying experience for everybody involved. The person's not getting what they want. The server is stuck in the middle. The chefs and cooks, you know, feel like the bad guys, whether there's a good reason or not. And believe me, I've worked in restaurants where they totally could have substituted, had absolutely no reason not to, but it was just, it's printed on the menu. Sorry. And I have that without peanuts. I know you might die, but that's just the, you know, you got to roll the dice sometimes. It's just a weird situation all around.
All right. I'll feel a little bit better now that when I feel really annoyed at that situation where they won't substitute something out for me, where I'll try to remember the chaos that I'm creating when I ask that question.
Or they just have to be a little more, I think, colorful on the menu. Like, yo, soy boy, you're going to eat a little wheat tonight. Like something to that effect.
Great. So we're just going to antagonize people with food allergies. That's wonderful.
No. That's why I got out of the business. So I didn't accidentally do that. No, I don't blame people for asking. I've asked for a million things in restaurants. I check the menu first, probably to see if it was allowed.
The one that's unexcusable is wanting to substitute French fries for anything. Like, you know, you're making French fries. Just put them on the plate.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I go the other way. I'm the freak of nature that gets fish and chips with mashed potatoes.
That's harder though.
The server will look at you kind of weird. And then my joke is, are they real? And they're like, well, yes, sir.
That's your penchant for boxed flaky mashed potatoes.
That's my one. Yeah, my guilty pantry pleasure. instant mashed potatoes, which I have to actually convince people I'm not just pulling their leg. They're like, really? Like, why is that so hard to believe? That's people my age. We lived in the golden age of processed food. So, you know, you develop a certain taste for things, whatever those artificial ingredients are in instant mashed potatoes are. I like them. I like them a lot. And what's happened the last few years with people really, being much more, what's the right word? Much more understanding of food allergies.
Okay. Yeah. That's true.
Now it's like restaurants generally, I think, bend over backwards these days, and they actually are proactive, and they'll say, if you don't like this, this, or this, you can have this, this, or this, which is such a better way to do it.
Well, they also don't want to be called out on Twitter. That's the other part.
Or on a podcast.
That too.
By a couple of wise guys. So yes, I think this is a problem that's probably going to go the way of the dinosaur, because now people know the drill and you just have to offer all the different things. Although, you know what, if I'm stewing chicken thighs for a curry, I really don't want to give you a chicken breast instead. it's just not going to be my, what I envision for that falling apart meaty dish. So
it's not about you, John.
It's not. The customer is once in a while right, I guess.
Once in a while, but it's not about you.
It's not. That's why I'm in the kitchen.
So, John, what did we learn today?
Well, I think we learned several valuable lessons. First and foremost, if you're ever at the French Laundry for dinner in a large party, try your hardest to sit next to a 13-year-old.
That might work in many, many, many good restaurants.
Or yes, let me update that. If you're in any restaurant setting, always try to sit next to the 13-year-old, especially if the menu is on the, you know, cutting edge creative side and is going to have things like oyster jelly and deep fried sweetbreads that look like fried chicken, but they're not.
That sounds like a very, very good piece of advice.
And then, of course, you know what's good with fried chicken and or sweetbreads?
Beer?
A nice cold beer. Just for the sake of argument, you're traveling and you lose your wallet. And for medical reasons, you have to have a beer, something with the hops, works with your medicine. Don't be afraid to look in that last row in the minibar, the row they don't check or look at or can't even barely see. If you're careful, you can pop the top off, drink the beer, replace it with water, put the cap back on, and no one will be the wiser until possibly 3 months later when a super thirsty German tourist discovers your crime.
Inspiring a generation of criminals.
Yes. If you're going to do it right. And then, of course, go to the Vatican.
And then, of course, the last thing we learned today was about ordering off the menu.
Oh, yes. The last thing we learned, the customer is almost never right.
Exactly. John, I'm very happy that you have decided to leave your life of crime behind. That makes me very happy.
Well, thank you. I mean, some people would describe what I do on YouTube as stealing money. But I know what you're saying, and I appreciate it. All right. Say goodnight, Andrew.
Goodnight, Andrew.